This is Galesburg's Evening News on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. Thanks for joining us tonight. As you'll recall, over the weekend, there was an incident in Fulton County where a man claimed his car and his child were taken from him. That triggered a statewide Amber Alert being issued, but it turned out that the person who made the report essentially made the whole thing up, and he's currently in jail and made a court appearance today. And there were a lot of there have been a lot of interesting comments about the whole situation nonetheless, but one of the ones I thought we could get an answer to is there were some people that wondered about why the Amber Alert was even issued to begin with. So I thought we'd take some time to explain sort of the Amber Alert process and some other related matters to that with State Trooper Jason Wilson with the Illinois State Police District 7 based in East Moline. He covers, and District 7 covers Knox, Henry, Rock Island, and Mercer counties. While this was not the State Police District involved in this issue in Fulton County, I knew he would be pretty good to explain the process nonetheless. Trooper Wilson, thanks so much for your time.
Well, thank you for having me once again.
Yeah, very glad to have you as we get close to the holidays here, which we'll also talk about here in a little bit. But the situation with this Amber Alert, I note that we don't see a lot of them, at least in this area, perhaps compared to the, you know, Chicago area or some other parts of the state maybe. But I think that probably goes to show that law enforcement take the issuance of one seriously, wouldn't you say?
That's exactly right, and it's actually designed specifically for that. There has been criticism in the past about an Amber Alert not being issued, and the problem with that is there's such a stringent number of criteria that must be met before an Amber Alert is issued that in the past there have been certain cases where there's only been part of the criteria that we could actually check the box off of, but not everything. And if you can't specifically say, okay, everything checks out here, then we can't issue an Amber Alert because we don't want to turn an Amber Alert into white noise, basically.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the criteria you have to look at. And is it something that ultimately that's a state police move most of the time?
It is one of those things that the best thing for me to do is actually we are issued an Amber Alert notification plan card that we actually put into our pocket to make sure that we've got the criteria with us just in case one of these incidents do take place, because it is such a fluid issue and such a fast moving scene, I guess, that you need to get the information out there as soon as possible if that's the case, that there is the need for an Amber Alert. So one of the things is, yes, you're supposed to notify the nearest ISP district or at the very least get a hold of the ISP clearinghouse for missing and exploited children to be able to get that information out there so it can immediately go into the Amber Alert system.
That sounds like that's priority number one, right? Just kind of sort of doing a smell test, I guess, if you will, before you issue an Amber Alert.
Yes, the law enforcement agency that's petitioning to start the Amber Alert, there's four criteria that must be met. Number one is you have to confirm that the child has been abducted. The second one is that the child must be under the age of 16. Or there's been proven mental or physical disabilities with that child. The third one is that law enforcement must believe the child is in danger or serious bodily harm or death at the time that they're going to issue the Amber Alert. And the biggest reason for that is when there's in custody disputes between one parent and another, and the wife or the ex-husband or wife might say, my child's missing, my husband has the child, or my wife, ex-wife has the child. No, I don't believe that they're in any harm. It's just that they don't want to give the child up, that we can't issue an Amber Alert for something like that. And then the last criteria is there's enough descriptive information about the child, the abductor, and or the suspect's vehicle to believe an immediate broadcast alert will help. That's the one that really has to be checked, because we've had some cases in the past where it is believed that children are missing, but there's no other information to be able to further. So Amber Alerts haven't been issued in those situations.
It seems like of some of the Amber Alerts that I remember, Jason, that maybe that a couple of those criteria really stick out to me. That's sort of the in danger of of having bodily harm being committed to the child is number one. And it seems also, too, that maybe that stems from a lot of times a domestic situation that's gone bad, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, one of the things that is kind of, I don't think it's a secret, but that isn't acknowledged is that most child abductions are actually from a biological parent, or at the very least a family member of that child. We always think stranger danger, and we always think of the guy in the panel van down the street that's the danger, but most abductions are actually from somebody who knows that child.
Wow, that's that's certainly something to think about there. In this particular situation, and again, I want to emphasize, this wasn't your district that dealt with this per se, but in this case, the Amber Alert was issued, and after that point, it was then learned that basically the guy that made the report was making all this up, and that kind of made people wonder why the Amber Alert was issued at all. It seems to me that maybe you'd almost want to, in a situation like that, err on the side of caution until proven otherwise, right?
And that's kind of where I could see that being the case in this situation, is that they were, it's kind of one of those things where it's better to have and not need than need and not have.
Yeah.
As we've been talking about, we don't want to flood the airwaves with Amber Alerts without having, you know, all the information, or at least enough information to work with, to try to get the information out to the public so they can recover a child that's missing. But with that said, when you're talking, you have literally a golden number of hours to be able to get the information out before there's a possibility that the suspect could get away.
Yeah.
You don't have a lot of time to make to vet everything right away. You would rather get the information out to be able to later say we're canceling the Amber Alert, versus the other way where you sit there and think that may not be right, so we're just not going to send it out. And then even worse would be if an Amber Alert was needed and wasn't issued.
In this particular case, the guy who made the report allegedly told investigators, or basically fessed up at some point and said, you know, I was robbed during a drug deal and I wanted this guy that robbed me to get arrested, so that's why I concocted the story I did. Have you ever dealt with a situation like that before?
There have been, yeah, many situations that resemble that exact one right there.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that seems to never really be thought of is the ramifications of using the police as your own personal revenge squad, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
What's going to happen after you falsify a police report and you utilize assets that weren't needed? It can get very costly, both with your freedom and with monetarily, if need be, to be able to reimburse some of the resources that would have to be expended in these types of situations. So it's obviously not a good thing to do. Obviously, many have to question the mental aspects of the suspect in this case, to the point where, I mean, being under the influence of drugs or whatever it might be, I'm not familiar with it, so I'm not sure.
Sure.
But to come up with this kind of story to try to use the police in this way is obviously remarkably illegal, and it's actually counterproductive to the society as a whole.
In addition to a charge which wasn't really explained here of residential burglary, he faces charges including filing a false police report, false representation of a police statement, and making a false 911 call. How serious of a set of charges are those?
I'm not completely sure what the classifications of them are.
Okay.
I could see a possibility of a felony floating in there somewhere, but I'm not sure right off the top of my head if they are class A misdemeanors or if they do go up to felony range.
But it sounds kind of like what you said, though, the restitution aspect of it might be the most serious part of this for him.
Yeah, it very well could be, because you're talking, when you actually utilize an Amber Alert, you're sending out multiple resources at that point in time to try to, like we said, the whole design of it is to be able to recover that child as fast as possible.
That said, we've talked about, a bit about how, quite frankly, dumb this situation was and how ignorant this person seems to be in the situation. But if you feel like you're in a serious situation where your child is in danger and has been abducted, you shouldn't hesitate to call 911, right?
Not one bit. And like I've said, that's exactly what this is for. And that's why this system's been put in place. There's the tragic story of Amber, who actually wasn't in this situation, is just awful. And so we definitely want to make sure that we end on the positive note of this system's in place specifically to protect our children. And it is there if need be. We just make sure that we don't abuse it, and we use it only when absolutely necessary. So that way, when people see that alert that goes across their phone and goes across the message boards on the interstates and goes across the televisions and radios and any other media we can get a hold of, it's specifically to focus the entire population to be able to look for that child.
Well, speaking of important messages we can get out, I have about a minute or so here, Jason. I know that I imagine you and the rest of your coworkers are going to be pretty busy here over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's, once again, it's that time. It's the most wonderful time of the year from what I hear, Will. So, naturally,
you too, huh?
Yeah. So naturally, that's going to bring up a lot of interesting times for everybody. And the hustle and bustle isn't just a song. It really does seem to happen out there in the real world. So we're going to see people moving around, trying to get to grandma's house and wherever else they need to go. Biggest thing, once again, is yes, we will have officers out there, and we're just looking to keep everybody safe. And it's fortunately, there isn't very much that's changed from the other messages that we've given in the past, which is just make sure you slow down. Please make sure you put your phone away. Just kind of talking about before going to Springfield today, I actually had a gentleman pass my fully marked squad car looking at his phone the entire time.
Oh, gosh.
I had to pull up next to him and look over at him for several seconds before he even realized that he had passed a fully marked squad car looking at his phone.
Oops.
Yeah.
So
that doesn't end well.
So. No. And that's probably the sort of thing you're going to be looking especially out for here over the next couple of weeks, that along with some of the usual violations you're apt to see this time of year, right?
Yep, that's exactly right. And our two biggest problems, or I guess the three biggest problems we have out there that are causing the crashes are distracted driving, speeding, and driving under the influence of drugs and or alcohol. And one of the best ways, in case you are in a crash, to keep yourself safe is to obviously wear that seatbelt. So those are the four things that we're going to still focus on, because those are the things that we're seeing that kill people more consistently than anything else on our roadways.
Okay. All right. State Police Trooper, Safety Education Officer for District 7, Jason Wilson, thanks so much for your insight. It was quite helpful. I appreciate
it. Thank you. Appreciate it, Will.
Stay tuned. Galesburg's Evening News continues with sports and business news next on WGIL.